we're going to be continuing our series on what it means to be a healthy Christian, or what kind of looks like. And this is the kind of concluding one that we'll be talking about today. And if you look at your bulletin, it says it's called Walking Well. So I'll let you in on a little secret. I'm not sure my wife knew this, but actually when I was growing up, I was what they call pigeon-toed, which means I walked with my feet kind of in a bit of a snowplow formation like this. So it wasn't really that bad, but I think Chinese parents like to highlight the things that you do wrong. So my parents used to tell me all the time, oh, it's because you're pigeon-toed, you walked really funny. So what they used to make me do was wear my shoes on different feet. So I'd wear them mix-match because they were convinced that that would fix the fact that I was pigeon-toed, which I don't know if that worked, but I remember going on holiday, and the whole time I had to wear shoes the wrong way around so that I could try to fix the way my toes bent in a little bit. In hindsight, so I think my wife did notice that, oh, actually, you're not pigeon-toed, just that when you walk, your leg does this kind of weird swinging thing, like what? So apparently, when I walk, this leg kind of kicks out in a very awkward way. It's a strange kind of thing. So it was in that kind of thought where I started realizing, actually, walking seems like it should be a really simple thing to do, right? Like, we all learn to walk when we're babies, and we pretty much think we've mastered it by 3 years old. But actually, to really walk well, like physically, is not that simple. So I thought, oh, let me just go on YouTube because it has so much wisdom, and find some videos on how to walk. And after watching a few physiotherapists teach me about walking, I thought, should I show this? This is a 15-minute video on how to walk. And I thought, nah, that's probably not appropriate. Let's go search Google instead, or in my case, DuckDuckGo is the search engine of choice for me, and help you guys with tips for walking. So you think, oh, this is what Bert meant when he said today's message is on walking well. Yes, we're actually just going to learn how to physically walk well. So if you look, there's a few things here that you can probably highlight. Is one, you got to relax your shoulders, back straight, chin sort of parallel to the ground. And if you walk in even strides, and you walk with your heel rolling forward to your toe like that. So I'm like, so I thought I'd walk like this now, and I realized, oh, I never walk like this. This is never my default walking position, right? I think for most of us, our default walking position is, depending on what country you're in, but in this country, it's normally a little bit more hunched over, and depending on the weather, more like this walking. When I was in Hong Kong, I realized people walk really fast like this. And like I'm for me, it's always very confusing because I have very short legs. But I realized actually in Hong Kong, a lot of people have short legs. They just all walk really fast, and I'd be that annoying person just kind of sauntering along, and the people are behind me like. it's also similar when I go shopping, and I like to walk really slowly when I shop, and other people like to walk really fast and like go, like we're going at this at full speed. I'm like, oh, I'm so tired already. Just let me stop. There's things about your posture and your walking that apparently tell a lot about you, like whether you walk aggressively or whether you slouch, what kind of body language that puts out. And for when I was looking into this, and I was thinking about actually walking well, I realized, you know, even physically walking, most of us have a certain style that way we walk. But we get so used to that's just how we've walked our whole life. We don't think that much about it. And I want us to think, well, actually, spiritually, or else, actually, in life, how well do you walk? Like, how well are you walking in life itself? Now, if we broke it down instead of a physical kind of thinking, you just broke it down in, like, emotional, spiritual, social way, you would be in the same, well, actually, I don't know how well I'm walking in life. One of the biggest problems we have when we become adults is we realize, I don't know what I'm doing. And you ask other people, and they're like, we're not sure what we're doing either. You have kids. I don't know what we're doing. I don't know how well I'm walking in life. I don't know how well I'm facing what I'm facing at the moment. And then you start thinking, well, actually, is there a way to walk through life well? Is there a way to walk well? And what does that even mean? What does that even look like? And starting with, I thought, well, actually, for us as Christians, or for those of us who are seeking out what it means to follow God, what does it mean to walk well spiritually? to actually walk in that way. And I wanted to start with this passage in Ephesians. Actually, we'll just be looking at this chapter in the book of Ephesians, Ephesians chapter 5, and going through it. And if you looked at it, this first one, all right, if you're curious, I didn't just concordance search the word walk and see how many times it came up and then say, well, here's one on walk in love, so I'm going to preach a sermon on that. No, actually, I thought about this, and actually this passage in particular in Ephesians 5 has a real strong meaning to my heart. But let's walk through this a little bit. Walk through this. Ephesians 5, it says, therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children and walk in love as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us, a fragrant offering and a sacrifice to God. Now, of course, if you look at this, and the first thing you'll say is a walk in love. Okay, so what's that mean? Now, a lot of us like to read the Bible by just taking the parts that we like and then just highlighting that. So you might read this and say, walk in love. Oh, did I click twice? All right, so if you just said that first, I'll say walk in love. So you think, actually, if you've seen people who walk in love, when they're in love with someone, and the way they walk is like the dumbest kind of walk in the world. Oh, hi. Just walk like this. Is that what we think when we think walking in love? Oh, hi. And then you see people who have been married for many years, the way they walk in love is normally not the same kind of way, right? So if we just wanted to take the Bible off context and say, yeah, we've just got to walk in love with one another. We've got to love everybody the same and just love, 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 and just walk in that kind of love, you would get lost very quickly. Because actually for us to understand what it means to walk in love might have different meanings. We have to understand what it means to actually love, to see what that means, right? So a young couple in love, their kind of love is this kind of emotional, blind, not necessarily a lot of depth in that love. But when we talk about actually what does it really mean to walk in love and what does it mean for us to say, well, if this is a good way to live life, how do we walk in love? And so if you really broke it down, the way the passage goes, it says, walk in love as Christ loved. Okay, so that's the first thing. But then it goes on, right? Walk in love as Christ loved and gave himself up for us. But then he goes on, right? Walk in love as Christ loved, gave himself up for us, a fragrant offering. And finally, and sacrifice to God. If you break this down, you begin to understand what it means to actually walk in life in love. The first thing that we see is that actually we have to walk the same way Christ did. And the way that he walked was as a servant, as a sacrifice to God, this kind of unselfish, this kind of loving offering of sacrifice. That's the kind of life that he lived. His life for us was given completely. He gave himself up to die on the cross so that we could live. Now, when I think of walk in love, I normally don't think of that kind of level of sacrifice or of kind of servanthood, right? In fact, when I think of walking in life, I don't think that way. Actually, when I think of walking in life, I think about what I need to do, what I need to accomplish, what I hope my life turns out to be, where I think it should be going. In my life, I'm very used to thinking selfishly or my own perspective or what I need to do and what I need to get out of life, where I want to go, what I hope to achieve. But when we look at this, Christ's perspective is, when you walk in the love of Christ, you're saying, actually, it's this idea of service, of sacrifice. True love is this kind of love that gives up. And a few weeks ago, I talked about what it means, actually. One of the big characteristics of being a healthy Christian is this idea of service, of not being selfish, of giving yourself up for others. And it's backwards, because actually, we have this instinct to say we want to protect ourselves or we want to achieve things for ourselves. But actually, God is saying, actually, the best way to live is when you learn how to live unselfishly in this kind of giving perspective. For me, it means when I read the Bible and I'm looking at Jesus in life, I'm saying, well, actually, do I want to live the way Jesus did? Is that a good way to live life? When you look at Jesus's life in the Gospels, you begin to see, actually, Jesus didn't suffer the same kind of problems that we suffer with. Things like insecurity, loss of direction, confusion. He didn't seem frustrated with things all the time. He had passion. He had direction. He seemed to have hope and promise, but his life always seemed alive. And people were always drawn to him because he had this life in him. For me, it's saying, well, actually, I want to live that way. I wish in my life I lived with that same kind of passion, that vibrancy. Not only that, when people were drawn to me, they weren't drawn to me because I was awesome, but because they saw that there was a life in me, something different. For all of us, that's what we think of. Actually, that's great. That seems like life with a purpose, life with meaning. Those kind of infectious living. When we start saying, actually, walk in God's love, it's saying, well, actually, the way he did that was through this amazing love and service to people. His amazing compassion for those who are in need. His amazing patience with his disciples. But above all, his clear focus that his life was for God. Like he said, my whole life is a sacrifice to God. The moment you realize that, the moment you say, actually, my life itself is a sacrifice to God, you lay down your own rights, your own desires, and say, well, actually, I'm going to go with God. I'm going to trust in his leading. I'm going to follow him. Now, that's a hard choice to make. And a lot of us aren't in that place. We're not at that place where we want to say, well, actually, I really want to trust God. I really want to follow him. But we have to come to the moment where we say, well, actually, is what God's saying better than what we have at the moment? Is he more worthy? Is he more worthwhile? Is he more true? Because if he is, then clearly we should. The first thing is actually walk in love like Jesus' love for us. Learn how to walk in that way. The passage goes on, and as the passage goes on, it starts to cut a little bit deeper, a little bit closer. So let's read on. In Ephesians 5, verses 3 to 5, it says, right after Jesus' great walking in love, it says, but sexual immorality and all impurity or covetousness must not even be named among you as is proper among saints. Let there be no filthiness, nor foolish talk, nor crude joking, which are out of place, but instead let there be thanksgiving. For you may be sure of this, that everyone who is sexually immoral or impure or who is covetous, that is an idolater, has no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. All right, so these are tough passages to preach in church because actually we don't like talking about holiness. And actually one thing we don't like talking about is sexual immorality because it's, well, in general in church we don't like saying the word sex. It feels very awkward. It feels very like it shouldn't be talked about here. But actually in the Bible they talk about this a lot. Now in our modern society, the perspective is this. It's my body. It's my love. I can do what I want with it. As long as both parties are mutually consenting, it's okay. Isn't that what matters? As long as it's okay by me, then it's fine. Well, in some sense, yes, it's true. It is your body. It is your choice. You can do with it what you want. The question is whether that's the best course of action. And for those of you who believe in God, the next thing is saying, well, what does God think about this? If you don't believe in God or if you don't know God, you think, well, it doesn't matter. I can choose whatever I want to choose. I can live the way I ever want to live. But if you know or have experienced God, you have to say, well, actually, do I trust God and his direction more than I trust myself? And if that's the case, what does that mean? The hard word here is actually holiness and being holy or choosing to do the right thing. And when we talk about stuff like purity or not being jealous or speaking with good words, encouragement, as opposed to, you know, crude jokes and stuff like that, it's normally the kind of conversations that stereotype Christians. It gives us that reputation of why we're moralistic or you know, very rigid in a certain way. But actually what God is saying is there's a better way to live life. One that is in the giving and in the serving. If your whole life's perspective is, well, as long as it pleases me, as long as people are laughing because I'm funny, that's right, then you realize actually you are still in a very narrow, selfish perspective. God's push for us to be holiness is, one, because he says that we are actually to be instruments of his blessing and of his goodness and of his thanksgiving and of his joy. And you do that best when you have no blight on you. When there's no wrong someone can pin on you. When we talk about broken sexual relationships, you actually talk about lots of damage, lots of emotional damage, lots of shame, lots of guilt, lots of frustration, lots of fear that normally people don't like to talk about because it doesn't make for a good sitcom. But if you know any people who have had multiple partners and are struggling with trying to make ends meet, make relationships come back into a healthy kind of relationship, or their friends who have slept with their other friends, you realize there's so much brokenness there. It's really hard to repair. God says it's not for our legal boundaries. He says it because it's in our best interest. Because there's something great about holiness. Not as a moral line, but as an expression of love from God. To say, actually, this is the better way to live. When you live a life in holiness, it means you're actually not drowned in sin, doubt, guilt, and shame. The best example I would give is if you are walking, you have a heavy backpack on you, and you've been doing stuff that you feel doesn't really synchronize well with your life, there's two ways to deal with it. You accept it and say, well, that's what everyone's doing now, and I'm fine with it. As long as everyone else is okay with it, the rest of the world, then it should be no problem for me. So you're walking around with this backpack, and you just say, well, that's the way it is, and it's fine. But the thing about walking with a backpack on, at some point you start to get weary, get hunched over. It's the kind of thing where you then have to have a conversation with the girl that you're seeing seriously. Say, well,
I might have had a partner in the past. We can kind of talk about it, but everyone has, right? So it's fine, blah, blah, blah.
Or the kind of lying or the jealousy or the talk that you have essentially kind of comes back around and you have to face it. The amazing thing about God's forgiveness, it says, look, you don't have to wear that backpack anymore. I forgive you and I set you free from this. And in doing so, learn to walk upright again, to walk correctly. Now, these are hard things to do. You know, when you're passionate about something or something's really exciting, it's hard to stop. But it's kind of saying, actually, God, you know, I don't want to live that way. I don't want to be drowning or is frustrated in this kind of space. I want my relationships with other people to be based on something else, based on blessing, to see how I can serve them, how I can be an instrument of good to them. And you start realizing, actually, that is the beauty of God's life for us. When instead of coarse joking or gossip or tearing people down, you have this amazing chance to just bless them, to listen, to try your best, to try to hear where they're coming from and to encourage them. Instead of wrestling with just your sexual desires, you're saying, well, actually, I want to honor and I want to bless this person. The message here first is if you are struggling with those things or you have fallen in those places, come before God and just repent. Just say, I'm sorry. You know what? I have chosen to live the life the wrong way. I want to change that. And then secondly, change it. Stop living that way. Choose to follow God. We will all have regrets in life. We will all have done things that we wish we didn't do. You can't go back in a time machine and change them. But you can say, well, I now take that and I choose to live differently. I want to follow you, God. And that's what it means to say, well, actually, I want to walk in holiness. I want to walk like you walk, God. There's this other richness in holiness. So we're used to the kind of holiness which is kind of a judgmental holiness. That's actually not holiness. That's like someone thinking they're better than someone else based on their life. That's not holiness. Holiness is a little bit more beautiful. Actually, forget, not a little bit. It's a lot more beautiful. The best thing about holiness is when you meet someone who is so good but doesn't flaunt it and accepts you and loves you, but you look at their life and you're like, I want that same thing. I wish I could be as free as you or as good as you. I'm not that good of a person. I've messed up in so many ways. The best part of meeting someone who's really holy is they give you hope to say, well, actually, but if you can do it, if God has forgiven you, if you can move forward in that way, then maybe I can too. It inspires goodness. It helps move people forward instead of being the kind of backbiting, gossiping, jealous, money-grabbing society that we are into one that focuses a little bit differently. This society tries so hard to say, you know, we need to honor genders, we need to honor women, and yet there's so much degrading stuff in the media that just tears it down, when actually God at his heart says, yeah, you should definitely honor one another. You should lift them up. You shouldn't look down on someone because of their gender or their race, but rather you should be building one another up. It's this completely unselfish way of looking at life. And that's what it means to really walk in love. For us, we need to pause, we need to stop. And each day when we come to situations, we have to say, God, actually, am I walking in love here, or am I walking in love of myself? Am I walking for myself? These decisions that I make, normally sin, the root of sin is selfishness. The root of sin isn't love. The root of sin is actually, I want it because it feels good for myself. I want it because it makes me feel important, or makes me feel loved, or makes me feel funny, or makes me feel good about myself. But actually God is saying, put that aside and say, follow me, put your life in my perspective. Look at God. And you begin to see, well, actually, this is what it means to live free. So the passage goes on. Verse 6 goes, let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Therefore, do not become partners with them, for at one time you were in darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of light is found in all that is good and right and true, and try to discern what is pleasing to the Lord. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them, for it is shameful even to speak of the things that they do in secret. When anything is exposed by the light, it becomes visible, for anything that becomes visible is light. So while on YouTube, and if you search the word walking on YouTube, you find all this kind of stuff. One of the things I found was these really funny videos of people walking while distracted and what happens to them. And I thought, oh, I should show some of these. But then as I watched them, I felt really bad because it's really watching people suffer. But for example, so apparently in the past 10 years, the amount of accidents caused by people being distracted by their mobile phones while walking has increased by like 1,000-fold. So much so that like people have died because they walked into the middle of the street. So on YouTube, it was bad because I watched this funniest videos ever of people distracted. And like the first one was someone getting hit by a car. I'm like, these aren't funny. It was horrible. And then I watched the rest of the video and it was just a bunch of people getting hit by the car. And then they're like, don't walk distracted. I was like, oh, I'm not going to walk. But so it started very innocently with like Facebook, and someone's looking at their phone, texting someone, and it walks right into a fountain in the middle of a shopping mall. Completely splash in. And then another person walking into a sign, a walking person in the light post, some people falling downstairs because they're not paying attention. I thought, oh, that's exactly like us. We walk through most of our life distracted. And not physically, so some of you actually may walk into stuff because you're looking at your phone, but I'm actually talking spiritually or mentally or emotionally distracted. You are cut off from what is real because you are consumed with something else. You're so distracted by it, you can't move forward correctly. And this is a big deal, and this is what this passage is kind of saying. Don't be deceived by other people's words that aren't true. Because you'll get caught up in that. You'll be distracted by it. You'll be lost in that. And there's a sense of actually so many times in life we stumble into the wrong thing, or we find ourselves injured or hurt or emotionally damaged or spiritually lost because we have been walking distracted. And God is saying, you don't live in that darkness anymore. You live in the light. So walk in the light. What does that mean? That actually means seek out what's true and what's real. The power of the Bible and the power of praying and the power of coming to church is actually in the sharing together of life. You have a greater clarity of what is true and what is right. Walking with God is saying, actually, yeah, God, actually, every day, I want my focus to be you. In my moments, in my work. But it's really hard because there's so many distractions, so many things pulling us in different directions. If we are so used to walking distracted, how do we learn to walk more focused, more clear? Sometimes it means cutting some things out, stuff that distracts you, stuff that lays you down. My friend found that he was spending too much time on the video games, so he deleted all those games off his phone. He said that's the only way to do it. Then another friend was even more dramatic. He said, I'm downgrading my phone from a smartphone to a dumb phone because Snake is not that fun. So he said that's the best way to prevent him from being distracted. Other people, they say, well, you know, I'm going to change my habits, the way I live my life, because I found that if I stay up late all the time, I always end up feeling bad in the long term. Something happens, I always have regrets. So instead, I'm going to change the way I live. It can be anything, the way you approach your drive to work, the way you deal with people at work. those situations start saying, well, actually, God, I need to make some changes because the way that I'm living now is not healthy. I am living distracted. And that distraction is weighing me down spiritually, emotionally. I come back home frustrated. I come back home angry. That's not where I want to be. It's hard because it means we have to actually stop what you're doing, take time, and figure out where you want to go. And figure out if where you're going is feasible the way that you're living now. For myself, it was the sabbatical, actually. So I had a chance to take a sabbatical last year. I took 6 weeks, and I went back to the States. I was hoping to write, but I didn't write because I found that my mind was so distracted. I've been working so long in the church that I did not know how to switch off. So when I said I'm going to sit back and write and reflect on my 20 years of ministry, I realized my brain did not know how to stop. It was just running. And I actually had to just spend those next 6 weeks hanging out with my parents, taking things slow, just talking with them, and figuring out again what is important in my life, what's important in my relationship with God, what's important in my ministry, and just say, well, let's move forward now at that pace. Most of us in life, we are pushed along in life very quickly, aren't we? You have your school, your 11-plus exams, your GCSEs, your A-levels, your university exams, your professional exams, and then you're suddenly in this career. You have your kids, you have your mortgage, you have your house, your pension. Then you have your kids taking their 11-plus exams, doing their GCSEs. Then you're like, oh, suddenly I have health issues, health issues, health issues. Suddenly it's like, oh, my gosh, I'm 80. What has happened? I never had a chance to take a break. And when I mean take a break, I don't mean take a holiday. I mean occasionally pausing to reflect on things and saying, God, how do I focus? Am I walking distracted? Where am I with you? How do I move forward with you? It's so quick to push God so far away from us because we're so caught up in the tide of life that you don't know actually where he is or what he's asking of you. One of the things about Hong Kong when I'm there that's always difficult for me to visit when I'm in Hong Kong is that everyone seems to be moving so fast towards a direction. But if you're there on holiday, you're not really going any direction. You're just like, I'm trying to figure out where to go. You're just kind of ambling along. Everyone else is so focused. But at the same time, that rush there means it's very difficult out of that. Out of that. Blah, 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 back again. To really get out of that kind of space. And me and my friend were talking about one of the things about being in Hong Kong or Singapore is we're saying, well, it's not really a place you whistle. No one really walks around the street in Hong Kong or Singapore whistling. I said, yeah, why doesn't that happen? Well, everyone's too busy. We're too busy with things. And I realized that kind of epidemic seeps very much into our own life, into our own things. By the way, next week's Oikos service is actually going to be talking about how to balance things in life. It should be kind of fun. It should involve kids and all the different generations. We have some good ideas with it. Looking forward to that. So that's going to be next week. This passage, it gets to this part here where it says, in verse 8, right? So walk as children of light and try to discern what is pleasing to the Lord. Take no part of the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of the things that they do in secret. Normally when we read that, we think, oh yeah, we should look at those other ones and condemn those people who are doing bad. That's not what it's saying. Actually, it's not done out of judgment or of pride or of better. It's actually saying, figure out what are the things that are distracting and wrong so that you know and you don't go down that direction. Not just for your benefit, but for also the benefit of your peers and your friends and the church and the community. Because we help one another live right. And that is a tough thing to do, actually. You would think in a church family it'd be really easy to talk to people about things that maybe they should reconsider doing because it's not healthy. But actually, sometimes it's even harder. Because you don't want to ignore them or make them feel bad. But you also want to say, the direction you're heading doesn't have a good ending. You got to think about what you're doing. How do we help each other walk undistracted? How to walk kind of in God's kind of leading. This verse actually continues, and it says this. Therefore, it says, awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. The greater hope is this. It's not just you doing it by your own power. It's Christ himself that illuminates and shows you. You just have to ask him, actually, God, is this distracting? Is this wrong? Where am I going? What's happening with this? You show me. Illuminate for me. Wake me up from my dead, from my distractions, from the place where I'm lost, and show me how to walk as you walk, to walk as a children or child of light. Finally, we come to this last part of this chapter, and let me read it out. Verse 15. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And do not get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit, addressing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody to the Lord with your heart, giving thanks always and for everything to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. This last kind of summary is saying, look, don't walk like a fool. Make the best use of your time here, because actually life is short. I know I'm not that old, actually. I'm just midway, right? 42. But I'm thinking more and more now than I ever have before what the measure of a man's life is, what it looks like. And maybe that's what happens in midlife crisis. You're closer to the end than you were to your beginning. So you can start seeing the end is near, personally. And I think about my parents, and I think about their life. And you start realizing the fabric of history has gone on for so long, and we are such a small blip in time. How am I living now? And that if I used to do that, I used to just be filled with so much regret, and that regret would push me into depression, and the depression would make me feel just like such a failure and a loser. I just not want to do anything anymore. But now instead it says, actually, that reality, that truth of the fact that actually life is short is more inspiring a little bit. It's opening my eyes a little bit more to the fact that, well, God, I want to walk well the rest of my days. I want to walk well to the end, to the finish. Maybe the hopes and dreams that I had didn't pan out the way I wanted to. Maybe the way my marriage was going or the things you're going in your school life aren't going the way you wished. Maybe you didn't get into the school you hoped for, or you're not getting the grades that you wanted, or you didn't get that job you expected to be a millionaire by now. Maybe that didn't pan out. But God, none of that matters, actually, if I can learn how to walk well with you now. To shift the perspective from being so selfish, actually, to seeing how I can be a blessing. So the point of this is actually saying, don't get confused with what life is about, getting drunk in this kind of stupor of life, but actually figure out ways that you can be a blessing, singing songs, sharing God's love. This thing is maybe on one hand saying, yeah, worship God more, psalms, hymns, spiritual songs, make melody to God with your heart, giving thanks always. Maybe that's literal on one hand, but on the other hand saying, let your life be filled with God's song so that it is constantly flowing out of you, so that you will get to the point where you are ending well. The best way I can say this is that you are a walking well. If Jesus is the wellspring of life, if he's the one that has the living water, if he never runs out of that joy and that peace of life, we are that same thing. We are walking wells that walk through this dry and parched land. And we're saying, actually, you know what? Let me give you some of this refreshment. Let me encourage you a little bit more. Let me be the person in the workplace. Maybe I'm not an optimist, but even in my realistic outlook, let me encourage you. Let me be a blessing to you. In your marriage or in your families, instead of saying, why don't you do this or why doesn't this happen, find out ways that you can be a living water to them, to bless and to restore people where they are. Everyone in this world is dry, busy, feeling burnt out, too much pressure. I mean, us as Christians, we're the ones to say, well, let me share the love of God. Let me pour that out on you and to be that walking well to you and to the people around. Shall we pray? God, you know, we thank you because, Jesus, you did this amazing thing where you showed us exactly what life could look like, this kind of perfection in you. Jesus, I pray that you are teaching us how to walk in love, the same kind of love that you had, this sacrificial, unselfish, pure, and, you know, chaste love of yours. Let that inspire us to walk in holiness, to walk, to say, you know, God, we want to live right. We want to live according to the way you desire, because that is a great way to live. Forgive us for the times that we have gone wrong, Lord, and give us your courage, your strength, your Holy Spirit to let us now walk undefiled in you. Let us walk undistracted, to walk clear in what our focus is in life, Lord, to put aside the kind of false talk and instead say, you know, actually, God, we want to walk with that purpose and direction that you had. And finally, Lord, let us be a walking well, your beacons of light and for refreshment to the world around us. We thank you in Jesus' name we pray. Let's come and worship.